Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. When a New York nursing home is going to close, operators are supposed to give the State Department of Health 90 days notice and submit a detailed plan on how patients will be transferred. The agency has to approve the plan before anyone gets moved out. But according to a three-month investigation by WNYC, that did not happen at two New York City nursing homes, one on the Lower East Side and the other in Bedford-Stuyvesant. Both nursing homes were bought by the same company, the Allure Group, and then sold to real estate companies for profit without giving patients or public officials proper foresight or factual information about the closures. WNYC reporter Cindy Rodriguez tracked down some of the patients and staff at these facilities and is here to play some clips and talk about what she found, including some new details that she's going to break right here. Hey, Cindy, how you doing?
Hi, Brian. I'm good.
So let's just clear up a little background first for people who may not know this story. The Lower East Side Rivington Nursing Home has been in the news a lot this summer, subject to multiple investigations, because last year a development company paid the city to have a deed restriction which required the building to be used only as a healthcare facility lifted before flipping it to a builder of luxury condos for $116 million, netting a $72 million profit. So what can you tell us about the second nursing home on Bedford Avenue in Bedford-Stuyvesant that was also bought by the Allure Group around the same time?
Right. So this was a nursing home on Nostrand Avenue. It typically had around 124 patients in it. And Allure bought it in June of 2015. It was around the same time that it was running Rivington and presumably starting to close Rivington. So these things were sort of almost happening simultaneously, actually. The other nursing home didn't have the deed restriction, so it I guess maybe it flew under the radar a little bit more. But they were both happening around the same time. So both nursing homes were closing at around the same time. In the situation of cabs, some of the families of patients that I spoke to said that Allure took it over in June. By October, they started getting really worried because they started seeing patients getting transferred out, and they didn't know what was happening. So they held a meeting with the administrator to ask, why are people leaving and what is going on? Is this nursing home closing down? At that point, the administrator sort of dismissed rumors that it was closing. But then shortly after, there was a lot of pressure, and one of the family members that I spoke to, whose husband was there, said that she started seeing people just getting transferred out in ambulettes, and pretty soon her husband was getting transferred out as well.
So how close did I come to summarizing your reporting accurately in the intro? Was the owner supposed to notify the state about these closures and how the patients would be transferred, and did they fail to do that?
Yeah, you did a pretty good job of it. Yes, so the closure plan, the State Department of Health is supposed to be notified 90 days in advance, and then there's supposed to be a closure plan. The closure plan is pretty important because you have to remember that a nursing home patient is a pretty fragile patient. People are on ventilators, people have Alzheimer's, they've got some pretty serious medical problems happening. So the closure plan is to ensure that nobody gets hurt in a transfer. So it includes everything from how medical records are going to be stored, how a person's medications and their other necessities will be transferred. And it's sort of a roster of who's there and how they're going to be discharged and how their families are going to be notified. So it's very detailed, and it's there, like I said, to protect the patients. So if all the patients are gone and then it gets filed, well, it becomes sort of meaningless. So that is what happened in the Rivington House situation. In the CAB situation, the nursing home was not completely empty when the closure plan was filed. But according to family members, many of them were rushed out before the closure plan was actually put in place. If that makes sense to you.
Yeah. Why would it be in the owner's interest not to disclose to the state in advance that they were going to do this? Is there something they were trying to avoid in terms of regulation or in terms of meticulous guidelines for the transfer of the patients?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would say that on the one hand, to have patients there, you're bringing in Medicare and Medicaid money. But on the other hand, when a process is done, it appears to me that for a process to be done in a very meaningful way, it takes time and it has to be done very methodically. So I guess if you are in a rush to turn the building over, then it might be in your best interest to do it quickly and to have the patients discharged before the closure plan is in place.
So for this piece, you tracked down patients who were in both nursing homes at the time that they were closed. You talked, for example, to Rafaela Rodriguez, whose husband lived at CABS for 8 years. She didn't know anything about the closure at the time, but she recalls here patients being transferred out of the nursing home in droves. Listen.
Then the social worker, they started to work and call all the nurses home to where they can admit her. This person, the other person, just like that. And you can see the ambulance taking the patients to this nursing home, to the other nursing home, to the other nursing home. It was like a nightmare.
It was like a nightmare. Rafaela's husband was transferred to Concord Nursing Home, which is also in Bed-Stuy, and he died shortly after his transfer. Cindy, did she believe that the transfer had anything to do with her husband's death?
You know, she did believe that. She said that he went into a coma because his blood sugar levels reached a dangerous 700, and then he became despondent, and then he got pneumonia, and then he died. So she said that when he was at CABS, his prior nursing home, where he was there 8 years, his blood sugar never reached above, say, 250, and it was always pretty much in control. So when he was transferred, she believes that that resulted in some interruption of his care, and this is what happened. He died after being transferred. So, you know, it's hard to know, really, what the actual cause was. But advocates definitely say that when care is interrupted, you know, consistent care is pretty important, especially when you're dealing with someone that's very ill. And when they get transferred like that and there's an interruption in their care, you know, there's a lot of risk involved in that.
And do I see that you have a new development to break this morning with respect to Rafaela's husband?
Yes. So the Department of Health has said that it would be investigating the alleged inappropriate discharge of Mr. Santiago, as well as the inappropriate discharge of any other patient or family member that comes forward. That includes Sal Sigia, who is the patient that I found that was discharged from Rivington House.
You want to tell us more about that?
Sure. So Sal Sigia was at Rivington House. He was he had AIDS, but his real problem was that he had cancer and he had radiation. It was throat cancer. It affected his esophagus. He aspirates all the time. He has serious pneumonia. He can't eat. He's 6'3" and he weighs 116 pounds. And he was discharged to his fifth floor East Village walk-up, and that was very difficult for him. And he, at times, was crawling up the last bit of stairs in his building. So it was very hard, and his apartment was ultimately found unsafe by visiting nurse services. Eventually, Sal Sigia found a way to be in a elevator building with nurses and therapists that come see him regularly. But that took him 9 months. So that sort of goes back to what I was saying before, is that if you're going to do this appropriately, it takes time to get people into the right place.
Listeners.
Now, the other thing that I would add that is also new is that the Department of Health has said that the company was cited for a failure to file a closure plan in the Rivington House case. And so basically what that means is that their file has been dinged, and going forward, if they were to try to open another nursing home, it would be factored into what's called their character and competence determination. But I would add that there is no fine associated with this type of citation.
Listeners, anybody with a question for WNYC Cindy Rodriguez and this investigative report that took 3 months to flesh out? Or maybe anyone who helps us wants to help us still report this story. Maybe you have a loved one or a friend who lived at either of these nursing homes, the Rivington House on the Lower East Side or Cabs in Bed-Stuy, when the facilities were closed. Call in and tell us what you know. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. This ding on the company's record, this citation retroactively for failing to file a closure report. Part of your reporting was that the state didn't do that originally. So you have kind of two elements to this. One is that the company failed to file the closure report in advance as required. And the other is that when the state found out about it after the fact, they didn't really do anything.
Right. Those were both of the things that I've reported. And since then, the Department of Health has come to me and told me about this citation. They are still trying to give me the date that it was issued, so I'm still waiting for that information. But yes, those were sort of the two things that that I was looking at. Why were they allowed to file it after the fact, and then why weren't they cited for it as well?
Were you able to find out whether it's typical for that to happen, that is, for the state to do nothing in a situation like that? Or since it appears already that Rivington House got special treatment by the city, did they also get special treatment by the state?
Well, I was able to find what I was able to find, which I didn't actually include in the reporting, but was a controller report from, I believe it was 2014. This was a New York State controller report that looked at the way that nursing homes are cited. And sort of the very short version, or the conclusion that it came to, was that nursing homes do not get cited a lot, and often it takes many years when they do for those citations to actually happen. So that is what I found in regards to that question.
Let's take a call from somebody who I think was one of the sources in your story. This is Susan Duha. Susan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks so much, Brian, and kudos to NYC, and hi, Cindy, and thank you so much for the story, and great news on the Department of Health agreeing to investigate those discharges. But I think that there are some other things that are worth looking at as this moves forward. The Allure closures present a real problem, because what they did was they discharged people gradually in advance of closing to avoid doing closure plans. And there isn't anything in place that I'm aware of to avoid these creeping closures and creeping conversions to real estate, luxury condos. And I'm wondering whether really the law is sufficient to protect consumers in these cases. Secondarily, yes, there are people who are very fragile and who need continuity of care and need to be protected against transfers made without adequate provision for their care and for, you know, their being able to be close to family and so on. But also, what opportunities were individuals in these nursing facilities given to go home to their own communities and their own homes? That certainly should have been considered. And it would have taken time to craft plans for them to transition to the community in keeping with their civil rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Supreme Court's Olmstead decision. I think these issues deserve consideration by the State Department of Health, by CMS, possibly by the Department of Justice.
And Susan, you're an advocate in this field. Do you want to remind people what your group is?
Yes, I'm the executive director of Center for Independence of the Disabled in New York, and we're a civil rights organization for people with disabilities in New York City. We help people with disabilities access services and benefits and help them protect their rights.
If there was one policy change that you would hope would come out of all this focus on Rivington House and this whole situation, what might it be?
I would like a whole new look at closure planning and discharge planning to attempt to avoid these stealthy efforts to avoid closure plans and to make the amount of time available post-closure plan more robust and to ensure that people have real plans for transfer and real plans for going home.
Susan, thank you very much for chiming in. We really appreciate it. I'm going to go to Harvey in California, who says he wants to put this in national context. Harvey, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Good morning, Brian. I listen to you all the time from California. I'm a New Yorker. I think it's important to understand that there's a fundamental issue here, and that is that this is not an issue of providing care. This is an issue of flipping real estate. And unfortunately, there's a lot of very unscrupulous people that are in this industry, not because they're doing the right thing for the right reason for the patient. They're doing the right thing for the right reason to be able to capitalize on the property.
Well, that's when people sell the nursing homes, right, as opposed to the people who actually keep and run the nursing homes and keep them up and running, right?
Oh, don't, this is a split-screen issue. There's the people that run the nursing homes, and they're very dedicated, but oftentimes they're owned by real estate investment trusts, and these are all real estate plays. So the real estate investment trust is contracted to have a management company come in and run the nursing home on their behalf. They get paid for every penny that they spend. So they get paid twice. They get paid for managing it, and then they get paid in addition for the sale of the property when it ultimately transpires.
Interesting. Harvey, thank you very much. Harvey says he's a long-term care expert, so was able to put that in some national context. Terry in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Brian. I'm a long-time listener, I think, from the beginning. First-time caller.
Glad you're on.
I want to tell you, I worked at the Village Nursing Home for 7 years very happily. It was a wonderful place. I was a physical therapist there. Village Nursing Home was owned by Village Care of New York. It was sold and is now a condo development, although the Village Nursing Home was formed to be a community nursing home out of great need. Village Care of New York also ran Rivington House. And I would ask this lady to step back this a little bit. And how can Village Care of New York sell these much-needed community organizations to people who flip them? And is there a pattern? And there's just a whole lot of things to be looked at. Village
yeah.
Care does a lot of good to a lot of people.
Terry, thank you. And this woman is WNYC investigative reporter and urban policy reporter Cindy Rodriguez. Cindy, how about the role of the former owner and runner of the nursing home?
Right. She makes a good point. So, yes, it's true that Village Care, so maybe this is a good point for me to clarify something. So Village Care was the original owner. They wanted to sell. I believe they were having financial problems, and they were an AIDS nursing home, and there wasn't as much of a need. So they were looking to sell that and use that money to invest in their other nursing homes. But to do that, it's true that they had to empty their nursing home. And they did that. And so when they delivered it to Allure, there were only two patients in there. So that's another closure plan that I have not looked at. And I did try to reach some of those patients, those original patients that were moved out of the place, but I was not able to get in touch with them. It's very hard, you know, it's very hard to reach these patients and their families. You know, nursing homes will say that there are confidentiality laws and they can't give out information. And so it's very, and often people don't have anybody. Often nursing home patients are alone and they don't have anyone advocating for them. So that's another issue as well. But she makes a good point, and I have not looked in thoroughly enough about Village Care to say much more than I have.
Terry, thanks for your call. Let's take one more, because Nancy in Park Slope wants to mention another facility that may be closing around now and put that on our radar screen. So let's see what that's about. Nancy, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Yes, glad to talk to you. Yes, my friend has been living in the Prospect Park assisted living residence in Brooklyn. And 2.5 years ago, the landlord, with no notice, told everyone that he was closing the place. He's a real estate developer, and we didn't realize that, and everyone had to get out. My friend, there were 130 people there. There's only 5 people left, including my friend, who doesn't want to move. Mm. There has been, the Legal Aid Society has taken it on. It's a case because there was an improper closing plan, and they're also suing the Department of Health about that. And I agree with the man from California that this is an issue of real estate developers acquiring these buildings and then flipping them for profit.
So that seems to be a real estate play in Prospect Park area.
Grand Army Plaza, yeah, in Park Slope, yeah.
As well. Nancy, thank you very much. Well, Cindy,
right.
There's one to follow up on, maybe, unless you already know about it.
I do know about it. I've done a little bit of looking into it, but I would say broadly that, yes, you know, there's Cabrini Nursing Home that closed on the Lower East Side as well, and that is now this luxury development. So, yes, there is something to the real estate, to nursing homes being flipped, and nationally as well. I spoke to a national organization that did confirm that this is a real problem nationally.
So, listeners, if you want to hear the full investigative report by our urban policy reporter Cindy Rodriguez about the Allure Group's handling of the transfer of patients from Rivington House and CABS in Bedford-Stuyvesant, you can still hear that on our website at WNYC.org. And Cindy, thanks for coming on live and walking us through it. Really, really good reporting. Thank you so much for it.
You're welcome, Brian.